Business Matters is brought to you by Print Supplies Frosses. Fed up waiting days for an engineer to service your printer or photocopier? Tired of running out of ink? Print Supplies keeps your office running smoothly with managed print solutions, local Donegal support and remote monitoring. With 21 years in business, Print Supplies helps save your business time and money. Email sales at printsupplies.ie to find out more.
Hello and welcome along to another edition of Business Matters on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. It's a busy show this week, so do stay tuned. Later on, I'll be speaking with Donegal woman India Kennedy, who has been appointed by the Irish Fish Producers Organisation as executive assistant to its CEO, E. O'Donnell, and she'll be primarily based in Brussels. The Irish Fish Producers Organisation plays an important role representing the Irish fishing industry and advocating for the sector both here at home and in Brussels. But first, Social Enterprise Republic of Ireland, that's the national representative body for social enterprises, has announced that its CEO, Donegal native John Logue, has been appointed to the government's small and medium enterprises advisory group to represent the interest of Ireland's social enterprises. Well, to delve into the whole area of social enterprises in a bit more detail, earlier this week I spoke with John Logue. John, many thanks for joining us here on Business Matters. In a moment we'll discuss your recent appointment and congratulations on that, but maybe I'd like to start by just asking you to explain what exactly the term social enterprise actually means, because a lot of people may have heard about it, but you're probably the man best equipped to give it a little bit of detail.
Yeah, if I can't do it, I'm going to be in bother, Chris. But effectively, a lot of people know social enterprises, but they may not know them by that term. So the example I always use is your local community centre. So that organisation was set up for a social purpose first, not for profit. So a group of people would have got together and said a particular community needs a facility to have events and activities. The market hadn't solved that problem itself, nor had the state. And so this third type of organization called a social enterprise stepped in to do that. And effectively, at a high level, a social enterprise is a business that prioritizes social impact over profit, and it reinvests any profits that it does make back into that social mission. So it's things like community centres. You can have day centres that are social enterprises, community childcare facilities. We see a lot of community cafes now where maybe, you know, there isn't enough profit in a local area to have a private cafe run. A credit union is a social enterprise. Your local enterprise hub can be a social enterprise. Community radio stations are social enterprises. So there's lots of different varieties of them that people will know dotted throughout their communities. There's about 4,300 of them across the country. But at the highest level possible, it's just a business that prioritizes social impact over profit and reinvests any of those profits back into its mission.
And social enterprises, are they a relatively new concept, or is there sort of at the moment a national or EU policy sort of driving them and making them more popular than they would have been previously?
Well, interestingly, Ireland has a really old history with the broad area of social enterprise, but we would have called it back then the cooperative movement. And obviously, we have a very strong history in Donegal, particularly with the cooperative movement. But the term social enterprise started coming into play in around the early 90s. And we had the first ever national social enterprise policy about 4 years ago now. And that really was the mainstay that put the term social enterprise on the map in Ireland. We've subsequently had a second national social enterprise policy since then. And that term has stuck, for want of a better word. But we would have talked about cooperatives before as an example of social economy type organizations.
And just because of the word social being in it, would it be fair to say some people, you know, they could have a business that could potentially be a social enterprise business, but maybe they think they might be put off a little bit thinking that maybe they can't make a profit and do you know what I mean? And maybe it's an area that might receive some subsidies. It's not to say that this can't be a very efficient, lean, well-run organization or operation.
100%. I mean, I would argue that, you know, there's an old adage that a social enterprise is to private enterprise like Ginger Rogers is to Fred Astaire. It does everything that Fred does, but she does it backwards and heels. So running a social enterprise, I would argue, requires an even more creative, talented entrepreneur, because they're doing the hard enterprise bit, but they're also trying to wear all of these other hats, like social impact, like reporting to funders, like managing a team of volunteers, like managing beneficiaries. A lot of cases too, social enterprises will employ people who traditionally can't get access to the labour market, people who maybe have a disability or long-term unemployed. And so it's almost harder to run a business like that. But there are examples of social enterprises who are profitable. Now, to be very honest with you, most social enterprises operate in areas of market failure, where either the private sector has said that there's not enough money to be made here, or the state has decided for whatever reason not to go there. And that's why social enterprise steps in. So it would be a big point that Social Enterprise Republic of Ireland tries to get across, that, you know, we can't just assume that these businesses will trade their way out of the problem that they're trying to solve, because the market hasn't done that in the first place. So yes, we have to help them to maximize their trading income for sure, and we certainly try to do that. But at some point, for a good proportion of these businesses, there will be some co-funding element to what they do. And it's almost like they're more like post offices really than they are private businesses. But some around the country for sure are very, you know, they're fully self-sustaining, high-income organisations that do turn over a reasonable profit, but it would just represent, I suppose, the minority of cases in Ireland.
Now, you're the Chief Executive Officer of Social Enterprise Republic of Ireland, CERI, S-E-R-I. Tell us a little bit about the organisation. How does one become registered as an actual social enterprise, and what exactly does the organisation do?
So we were set up about 5 years ago now by a group of people in the sector who felt that the sector needed a representative voice. So effectively, we're the representative body for Ireland's 4,300 social enterprises. We're chaired by Richard Bruton, so former Fine Gael minister. And really, our primary focus, Chris, is to that issue of viability, the viability of social enterprises. So if you're, again, take the local community centre as an example, they know what impact they want to have on the ground. We're not here to second guess that. They know that better than anybody. What they probably struggle with is keeping the business going, cash flow. And our overarching objective is to say, how do we create an ecosystem around that organization to make it as highly likely as possible that they can sustain themselves over time so they continually have their social impact? And we do that numerous ways. So we do that through advocacy. We deal a lot with government ministers, pre-budget campaigns, etc. We also build tools where we think they're missing in the market. So we have a national social enterprise hub that social enterprises can come on to and get access to funding supports, cost savings, networking, governance and compliance, toolkits, templates, etc. We also have actually a procurement platform, which we've recently launched, which helps public and private buyers find social enterprises to buy from. That's a huge untapped opportunity in Ireland. That'd be, you know, I think it's definitely worth discussing that further. But effectively, that's our overall role. Now, I mean, it's a massive job of work to get that done. And we've a team of two and a very dedicated voluntary board over and above that. But we're blessed to have so many social enterprise members across the country who step in as well and support us with advocacy at a local level. So it's very much a team effort in that regard.
And Donegal is very much to the fore when it comes to social enterprises. And there are numerous examples, and maybe you want to touch on some of them. Just people may not even realize that some of the companies and organizations out there are actually social enterprises.
For sure. I mean, I'm desperately biased when I say this, but Donegal is both objectively and subjectively, in my eyes, probably one of the best places in the world for social enterprise. And maybe that's because there's such a need here. You know, services don't tend to reach here. Or even interestingly, if you think about the I'm going to go down a slightly boring route here, but if you think about the disbursement patterns of population in Donegal, it makes it very, very hard for a private business to operate profitably in an area. So like, you cannot run a community gym or facility if you've only got 300 people in your catchment area. That's why social enterprise step in. And that's why probably in a Donegal context, given how, you know, dispersed our population is, and how poor transport infrastructure is between those areas, social enterprises step in. So there's over 140 social enterprises in Donegal, which is very, very high. And interestingly, it's not just your typical, you know, community hall, community centre types of organisations, even though they're incredibly important. Some I would regard world-leading social enterprises are based in Donegal. So if you think of Spree and Sport in Carndonagh, run by Helen Nolan, they, you know, there's very little things in Carndonagh that for Yugosport doesn't have an impact on in terms of what they do. You've got Liquid Therapy based in Rosnaula, which is a surf school for children with disabilities and their families. That's a world-leading social enterprise in what they do. And then similarly, you've got an organisation like No Barriers in Letterkenny, which is an inclusive gym facility which also offers neuro-rehabilitation activities for people coming out of a clinical setting. Again, that's run by Johnny Lowry, world-class, and again, getting world international recognition for what they do. So I think we can be, maybe as biased as I am, I think we can be very proud of what's happening in the Donegal social enterprise sector.
So in many respects, Social Enterprise Republic of Ireland is, you're a little bit of a helping hand. You can guide people in the right direction.
For sure. And look, I mean, we certainly don't claim to be all things to all people. That's why one of the big things we do is signposting. If we're not the right body to help, we certainly find the one that is. And there are some good organisations like Donegal Local Development Company, as an example, Inishowen Development Partnership as well, who are there to help at the kind of frontline startup social enterprises. But our overarching aim is we will do anything within our means possible to help you achieve your viability and so that you can have that sustained social impact over time in your local community.
And I take it the economic and social knock-on is considerable. As you mentioned there, 140 social enterprises in Donegal. If they weren't there as a county, we would be so much worse off. So you are playing a big role in promoting the economic and social life of the whole county.
100%. And it's the argument we always make to government or to key stakeholders is that need doesn't go away if a social enterprise disappears. It just means that the state has to pick up the tab and probably at a much higher cost. So the return on investment of investing in a social enterprise is substantial. I mean, we would have seen studies with social enterprises across the country where for every euro invested, the state is getting back 17 euro in return. So it's a very good business case. And even, you know, that's at the social side. You know, this government likes to talk about employment numbers, GDP. The social enterprise sector employs about 84,000 people. So that's about 3.7% of the Irish workforce. That's roughly about the same as primary agriculture. And so, I mean, those are the numbers that we're going into government talking about. This isn't some sector to be, you know, to be pitied or some minnow sector. This is a substantial employer, substantial contributor to GDP. It just also happens to have that huge social impact in communities across the country.
Now, recently, John, you were appointed to the government's SME advisory group to represent the whole social enterprise sector. So just maybe elaborate on that. What exactly is that going to mean?
Well, I suppose the group has a very simple, or not maybe a very difficult problem to solve, but I mean, simply stated, it is that we need to do more to help small and medium-sized enterprises get access to government contracts through procurement. That's not happening at present, or at least SMEs are very underrepresented as suppliers to government. The SME Advisory Group, our job is as simple as we need to do everything we can to advise government on how to improve that process. I happen to be there to represent social enterprises, but in that room is every form of representative body of SMEs in the country, like ISME, IBEC, the Construction Industry Federation, and then there's government bodies in there too, like the Office of Government Procurement, etc. But the overarching theme really is how do we help make it easier for SMEs to do business with the state? And I mean, the thing that, you know, continuously enthuses me here is the size of the prize, because the state is spending upwards of 22 billion euros a year. If I even got 1% of that for my sector, that's more than five times of all the income that's going into the sector at present. So the prize is huge. And, you know, we've a way to go in terms of making sure that social enterprises are procurement ready. Not a lot of social enterprises in Ireland are selling things and stuff that the government needs right now. But that's not to say that we can't move the sector in that direction. So, you know, you've seen a lot of success with like social enterprise printing companies or social enterprise stationery companies, or those providing training, for example. They're all things that are, I mean, you know, fast moving consumer goods. If we can get social enterprises moving into those spaces, there's a massive market waiting for them in the public sector. And that's not even to mention some of the large private companies who want to buy from social enterprises as well. So that's very much my focus as part of that group.
Fair to say that there is very much, from a government and a national point of view, there is a will there to see this sector expanding.
For sure. I mean, at some point, you know, ministers are going to be sick of me talking, and I'm sure I'm not the most influential person in the world, but I can guarantee you when they sit in front of their own local social enterprises in their constituencies, they're the people that influence them the most, because they see firsthand what would happen if that organisation no longer existed in their community. So I think my job a lot of the time, to be honest, Chris, if I'm to be most effective, is to step back and let those guys take front and centre, because they're the ones that most influence TDs and government ministers and public officials. And their work kind of speaks for itself because, you know, as you know, like a lot of these organizations have been in business for 10, 20, 30 years doing good work in the community. The only challenge right now is rising costs and a limited ability to increase their prices with very little co-funding available from government means a lot of them are to the wall. So we would have done research earlier this year that said that 56% of social enterprises have insufficient reserves to handle any form of unexpected financial challenge over the next year. That's a major worry because it says that these organisations are in the red, and if we don't do something to help them, that's going to be a problem. And then the challenge being then is when you think about how they get their money in the door, only 48% of social enterprise income on average comes from trading, so selling things and stuff. The rest comes from grants, it comes from fundraising, it comes from philanthropy and other sources. We need to increase that 48% up so that social enterprises become more resilient as organisations. And again, that's where we need the likes of local enterprise office supports, Enterprise Ireland, SkillNet supports, very few of which are actually open to social enterprises today. And that's another area that I think government can help us on moving the dial.
John, you're from Letterkenny. What's your own career path been that you are now CEO of Social Enterprise Republic of Ireland? You know, after school and college, was this a sector that you would have thought you may have ended up in, or was it something even on the radar at all when you were younger?
Not in the least. So I studied law, trained as a barrister, and got a call halfway through the bar or King's Inns to go out to be chief of staff in Digicel Caribbean in Central America in Jamaica, which against all family wishes, I decided that sounds like a bit of fun. So I'll go out and do that. And that was a very corporate environment, great learning. I mean, it's a huge organization working across 26 countries. But I think what I realized out of that was that shareholder value wasn't everything in life. And so I decided to say, what's the opposite of this? And the opposite of that was running an international social enterprise based in Dublin, but we're working across Ireland, Sub-Saharan Africa and India, helping with children's education. And I suppose that, like, if I'm being honest, that what I learned out of that is I'm probably not a very good social entrepreneur. But I said, I know there's aspects of this now that I know that I could help others with. And so I moved back to Donegal. I had been living in Dublin. And I started working with the local development company, supporting maybe about 50 or 60 local social enterprises with their financial self-sustainability, their governance, their compliance, their social impact, etc. And that gave me a really good understanding of, you know, that I wasn't alone with all the pressures that I was feeling running a social enterprise, that there's some universal themes here across the board, that we are operating in market failure, that there isn't enough support out there to help us increase our trading income, etc. And it just so happened, Chris, that the CEO job came up in Social Enterprise Republic of Ireland. And I thought, you know, you hear some people when the England football manager job comes up, they, you know, some non-league manager puts in a CV for the laugh of it. I kind of thought I was that guy. I said, I'd love that job, but I'm never going to get it. And five interview rounds later, I must have been the only person left. And I've been here for the last 3 years.
Going forward, obviously these are busy times with your new role as well. If somebody wants to find out more about social enterprises and what road to go down and the help that's there, what's the advice to them?
Well, they can, if they go to socialenterprise.ie, which is our website, they can sign up, first of all, for a free 3-month membership of SERI. And during that process, we can signpost them in all the directions that they need to get started. And even that, so that's if you're a startup social entrepreneur. If you're somebody that's already established, the very same process, we will connect you with the supports, regardless of what level of your journey you're at. And if they decide after the 3 months they don't want to stay a member, that's absolutely no problem. There's no obligation to do so. But I mean, it's a no-brainer in the sense of get in and get your 3 months of free support and see where that takes you from there.
And that was Donegal native John Logue, who is the CEO of Social Enterprise Republic of Ireland. the National Representative Body for Social Enterprises, and recently he was appointed to the Government Small and Medium Enterprises Advisory Group to represent the interests of Ireland's 4,355 social enterprises. You're listening to Business Matters on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. Join me again after this commercial break.
Business Matters is proudly sponsored by Principalise Frosses. Fed up waiting days for an engineer to service your printer or photocopier? Tired of running out of ink? Principalise keeps your office running smoothly with managed print solutions, local Donegal support and remote monitoring. Principalise helps save your business time and money.
Welcome back to Business Matters on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. The Irish Fish Producers Organisation has appointed Donegal woman India Kennedy as executive assistant to its CEO, Eoghan O'Donnell. She will be based primarily in Brussels, but will support the Killybegs-based organisation's work in Ireland and across EU institutions. Originally from Donegal town, India has been telling me about her role and the importance of the Irish Fish Producers Organisation and all that it entails. India, thanks for coming on to Business Matters this week. These are certainly exciting times for you, and you have your new position to look forward to in Brussels. Before we talk about that, can I ask you, though, about your own background and your interest in the fishing sector and where it all stems from?
Thanks very much, Chris. I'm from Donegal town. I've grown up here. My stepdad, Donal, worked on one of the boats in Killybegs for over 10 years. And so we always kind of had an interest in the fishing sector as a family. And when I was doing my dissertation, I studied in Ulster University in Belfast. And I studied politics and international studies. And for my dissertation, I wanted to research something that was meaningful towards my area. So I decided to do my dissertation on how EU fisheries policies affect the small coastal community of Killybegs. And from there, I got in contact with local fishermen. I got in contact with CEOs from the different member organisations. And I really got an eye-opening experience to the dire state that the fishing industry is in. So from there, I kind of kept in my interest in the fishing industry. I was very lucky. I got an internship in Brussels with MEP Santini Mercu. So I moved over there in September after I graduated. And in the first week, she wanted to meet with the Seafood Alliance because they were over. And three of the members is Eoghan O'Donnell, Brendan Byrne, and they had Manus Boyle over, all Donegal men. And I said, oh, I know all them. They're from Donegal. And luckily enough, we sat down and we met with them. And from there, I continued to engage with them. Then I rang maybe last month just to say that my contract was ending and, you know, I'd love to have them over again. And he had a position available. I passed on my CV and everything seemed to just fall into place. And thankfully, I got the job with the IFPO. So my first day was last Monday and I was started officially in Killybegs on Tuesday. So it's been great to get settled in and get going.
Well, what a start. You mentioned there the dissertation and the research that you carried out. And was it perhaps partly due to the sort of the shock? You mentioned the dire state of the fishing industry, that you were taken aback by it so much. It probably gave you even more of an appetite to look into things further.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that's not in the headlines half enough. Now, in the last number of years, there has been a massive media push from the fishing industry to say, this is the state we're in, this is the situation that we're in, more needs to be done. And the Taoiseach has now come out just to look into getting a specific minister for the fisheries, which would be a massive boost because the industry's at its knees. Not enough people are talking about it. Not enough people are realising how bad of a situation that it's in. And I think by making enough noise, doing enough research, working with these organisations, that's the only way it's going to get help.
The Irish Fish Producers Organisation represents fishers all around the country. It plays a vital role. Obviously, there's lobbying at a national level, also at an EU level. And so much is decided in Brussels. And to excuse the pun, I mean, Ireland, we really are a just a drop in the ocean.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All the deals are made, you know, all the deals are made in Brussels. And I think, in my own personal view, I think that's where we're going wrong. I think there's too many one-size-fits-all approaches.
Now, you've touched on it there. I actually had it written down, one size doesn't fit all when it comes to fishing. So one of the key things for the IFPO is to represent people here, to be a voice and hopefully lead to change in the years to come. There is huge potential for the fishing sector in this country, be it in Donegal or in other coastal areas. And I suppose that's part of the frustration, that because we could have so many more people involved, so much more employment, and we are an island nation, but in terms of its contribution to the national economy, it's a very small slice.
Absolutely. Like, there's been so many cuts in recent years through Brexit, through stock, through quota cuts. I mean, you cannot sustain coastal communities like Killybegs, like Castletown Bear, like Hoth, which have built their communities around the fishing sector. You can't sustain them if you're continuing to reduce the opportunities available for the people who depend on the fishing sector.
You mentioned the Seafood Ireland Alliance. There are a number of organisations representing the fishing sector. Is it important that you're all singing off the same hymn sheet, or pretty much all going in the one direction?
100%, Chris. I think the Seafood Alliance was formed in 2021, 2022, and since then there's been a massive shift in the media for the fishing sector. There's been more noise made, there's been more progress made, and I think that is because they've all come together. They've come from across the board and they've come together, they've sat down and they're showing a united front. That's the only way I think that things are going to be achieved at home and in Brussels, if you come as a united front.
And I know this has been a big area for your Chief Executive, E. O'Donnell, and alongside other sector leaders, he has helped establish this Seafood Ireland Alliance, bringing together the fishing and processing bodies together for fairer treatment. Is it a case in Brussels that those who shout the loudest will be ultimately heard?
I think it's a mixture of everything, Chris. I think those that shout the loudest, those that come adequately represented, and those who know to meet the right people, I think that's when the difference is being made. And I think E and the Seafood Alliance and the IFPO were really well represented in Brussels because of coming together and sitting down. And I think being established now in Brussels, it's a massive boost, because through my internship, I've met with the Fisheries Commissioner, I've met with the Perm Rep, their attaché for the Fisheries. I've made a lot of contacts and I know who is worth sitting down with and who could achieve more for the Irish fishing industry. So being based in Brussels has its massive boost.
So tell us about your typical week. I know you've just started, but as you go ahead, you'll be doing some work in Killybegs, you'll be sometimes in Brussels. What exactly will your role entail?
So it's a bit of a mix. So I'm the executive assistant to the CEO, so it'll involve some admin work, catching up on emails, engaging with members, organising A's travel and his accommodation for his various meetings. I'll be attending a few meetings on his behalf at home and in Brussels. So I'll be doing meeting minutes for that and making sure he's well briefed on the information that was passed on through the meeting. At the moment, we're getting ready for our AGM, which is happening on the 19th of June in the Harbour Hotel in Galway. So we're making sure that everything's well prepped for that and our speakers are ready and everything's lined up. At the moment in Brussels, June, July and August is kind of quiet months. Everybody kind of tends to go travelling or go abroad, and then the Parliament itself and the Commission are closed in August. So in terms of lobbying in Brussels, not much can be achieved, but it's more getting ready for September and ensuring that from the first week the Parliament opens, we hit the ground running, we're engaging as much as we can, and we're meeting as many people as we can, ready to fight for the fishing sector.
And how important do you feel is it for the Irish Fish Producers Organisation to get its message out there, to be at the forefront of getting media coverage? Because there's certainly a lot of issues, no doubt, you want to bring up, but you have to get people who are outside the sector to hear you as well as those who are inside the sector.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not just the boats. Like, we represent the fish producers. We are a small part of a massive blanket. You know, people think it's just the fishermen that are struggling. When you catch fish, you have to get a lorry to take the, you know, fish out. The fish has to be processed. The fish has to be transported. Then you've got the local shops, which supply the boats with their groceries. You've got the nets. You've got the sonar systems. You've got Mooney boats, which keep the upkeep of the boats. Everybody's being affected. So everybody needs a voice at the table. And it's so important that that's recognised.
India, the likes of Killybegs is a key component of the whole Irish fishing sector and considerable spin-off from the whole processing side. There's all the support industries as well. There's an awful lot of employment depends on it, both full-time and part-time. And no doubt you will be liaising and keeping in contact with those in the various sectors in your new role.
Absolutely. And I mean, we're based in Killybegs. Killybegs isn't Ireland's just, it isn't just Ireland's largest fishing port. It's one of the most important seafood production centres in Europe. And for a fish producing organisation, quota is their raw material. They need fish to survive. So if the stocks continue to decline and decline, the entire business model itself will come under severe pressure.
As you look forward, do you and the other people within the organisation, are you optimistic that after all the difficulties of recent years that there is a bright future for the fishing sector in this country?
I think you have to be optimistic. I mean, the industry itself is very much at a crossroads. They've shown, the fishermen have shown resilience through Brexit, through the recent quota cuts, and now the rising cost of fuel. So they're asking for fairness, they're asking for recognition, and they're asking to be shown that there is a future for the fishing industry, and that's our job now to fight for that and make sure that families and generations of fishermen to come, they have a job, they have a livelihood, and they can continue on the tradition.
We hear a lot about the importance of food security, and yet that general term, perhaps fishing is overlooked, seafood is overlooked in that regard, and it is part of that bigger picture that, you know, it's vital that we are able to put food on the table throughout the European Union, and that's where
Absolutely. The fishing
sector, it certainly can play its part.
I mean, when you look at the Irish fishing sector and you compare it with the Dutch and Russian fleets, it is minor. The fish that the Irish catch compared to the Dutch fleets, they have onboard processing factories on their ships. So you can imagine how much fish they're able to catch with that. So in terms of sustainability, I think the Irish are very aware of that and the importance of the viability of fish stocks.
So going forward, the likes of the Irish Fish Producers Organisation, what do you feel you can do? There's a general feeling out there that under the European Union, you know, that we're not getting a fair share when it comes to quotas and being an island nation, that we should be getting more. So we are only a small country within the European Union. How can we change things? How can there be a new sense of direction, do you feel?
I would have agreed with you in the past, Chris, about not being adequately represented in Brussels. But I think now Minister Timmy Dooley is doing great work for the Irish fishing sector, both at home and abroad. But I think the main goal for the next couple of months within the sector is the Hague preference and ensuring that the Hague preference is invoked. And a lot of the industry is going to be fighting for that because it's the only way that we get a seat at the table.
What exactly is it and how could we fare better if things were altered?
So essentially, the Hague preference is a long-standing safeguarding mechanism within the EU's Common Fisheries Policy, or the CFP. So it was established to allow nations like Ireland to receive an increased quota share for certain fish stocks when the total allowable catch fall below a defined critical threshold. So each year, there's scientific advice to say you can only catch a certain amount, and if it falls below the total allowable catch, the scientific advice, then you can trigger the Hague preference if it's a if it's a species that you're highly reliant on.
So from the Irish perspective, if there are changes here, it could certainly open up new avenues.
It could, but it has to go through, like, in 2025, the December Agri-Fish Council. We had representation over in Brussels. The Seafood Alliance were over there. Timmy Dooley was over there representing us. And they pushed to invoke the Hague preference, but it was blocked by France and Germany and the Netherlands and Poland, which meant it couldn't be invoked.
We hear a lot about the common agricultural policy. For the fishing sector coming down the track in Europe over the next couple of years, are there any particularly big events that are looming?
Well, the Irish presidency is coming up now in July, so Ireland will hold the EU presidency from July until December. So that will be a major boost for Ireland, and it's a great opportunity for the fishing industry to really push on to show that Ireland are strong players in the fishing industry and we won't be messed with. And I think that's a great opportunity. There is due to be a reform of the common fisheries policy, which many would feel it couldn't come soon enough. So you'd hope that there's an adequate reform of the common fisheries policy to ensure that some of the older and out-of-date rules within the common fisheries policy are amended or removed.
Now, just before we let you go, tell us a little bit about life in Brussels when you're at the sort of the epicentre of what's happening for the European Union. An awful lot of activity. Is there a real buzz about living there?
It's a great place to live. I moved over in September and I remember saying to my mum, I'll be back in a week. I'm not staying here because I'm such a home bird. I really didn't settle in college. But the minute I got over there, I just really fell in love. The buzz of the parliament, you know, there's so many Irish people living over there. It's really like a home from home. And I got settled in really well. I made some great friends. I've had some great connections. And then I started playing football over there too, which is lovely. So I'm really settled there and I'm really grateful that I got this job with the Irish Fish Producers Organisation because it means I can come home, but I also have my opportunity in Brussels to stay and really excel there.
India, many thanks for joining us on the programme and we wish you every success in your role as Executive Assistant to the CEO of the Irish Fish Producers Organisation and no doubt you will enjoy your time in Brussels working hard there as well as being in Killybegs and having the best of both worlds.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris, and I hope I can do the people at Killybegs and the members of the Irish Fish Producers Organisation justice at home and in Brussels.
Well, that's it for this week's Business Matters here on Highland Radio. As always, many thanks for tuning our way. May I wish you a healthy, happy and profitable week ahead. Until the next time, from me, Chris Ashmore, goodbye.
Business Matters is brought to you by Print Supplies Frosses. Fed up waiting days for an engineer to service your printer or photocopier? Tired of running out of ink? Print Supplies keeps your office running smoothly with managed print solutions, local Donegal support and remote monitoring. With 21 years in business, Print Supplies helps save your business time and money. Email sales@printsupplies.ie to find out more.